On today's episode, we're talking with Heather Johnson, the lead planner and owner of Epoch Collective. We discuss the process of working with a wedding planner from start to finish and an unfiltered insight of the demands of starting your own planning company. We hope you enjoy.
Hey kid, never stop running.
Makes me think of Anchorman.
Okay, so we have Heather from Epoch Events.
Oh, you said it right. How nice.
Does people get it wrong?
All the time.
Nice. What do they call it?
Epic. That's what, okay, to be honest, before I had met you, I was like, I don't know if it's Epic or Epoch.
Yep.
I have no idea. So that's like good clarification.
Yeah, no, it's super common.
And I've noticed on your website, you kind of go into detail of what it means. Mm-hmm. So go ahead and tell us again what it means.
So we usually give the analogy of like, it's Epoch, kind of like Tupac. But the definition of it is like a significant time in history. So think of like the Victorian epoch or era, and a wedding's the same. Like a wedding's a significant period in someone's life. So hence the name Epoch.
Yeah.
Cool. And you are a full service wedding planner.
Yep.
What is a wedding planner?
So a wedding planner, so there's like different things that people hire in the wedding industry. There's the coordinator, which is like basic event management logistics. Usually people call it a day of coordinator, where they show up the day of and handle everything. And then there's the wedding planner. People will typically hire us at the very beginning, and we help piece everything together. We help them source the venue. We help them source all the vendors. We want to make sure that they get the team that matches them. It's not so much a price game. We really try and help piece together things that make sense for them as an individual, their style, their vibe, their personality. And we just walk them through the whole process leading up to their wedding day. And they really rely on us to give them like educated decisions along the way.
So you've got a planner and a coordinator. Mm-hmm. Do you do planning and... So day of, are you the coordinator? Do you change to that typically?
Yeah. So whenever people hire us as a planner, that is comprehensive of everything. And we also do designing, which is, again, like a whole other different part of it. Not all planners are designers, and not all designers are planners. Y'all, this coughing. But yeah, like ultimately we're there from start to finish. So if they hire us as a planner, they automatically get us as the coordinator.
Okay. So let's kind of run through how an ideal client would work. So they come to you first and they haven't booked anything at all. That's what you're wanting.
Oh,
that's
yes.
Ideal.
Yes. I want a clean slate.
You want a clean slate. Okay. So we're coming to you. We want to plan our wedding. We want you to plan our wedding. We haven't done anything. What would be the first step for your client?
So the first step, whenever they book us, first we want to understand their budget and their goal guest count. Sometimes people have like, they just throw a number out there. They really don't know what a wedding costs. They're like, this is what I think I want to spend, and I want to invite 250 people. And then we have to break it down to them in a per person cost. Mm-hmm. And letting them understand that like a $50,000 budget for 50 people is going to look a hell of a lot different. That, am I allowed to cut?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. You're good. Yeah, you're good. But yeah, a $50,000 budget is going to look a lot different if you had 150 guests, because that per person cost really affects, you know, food, mm-hmm. alcohol, the number of tables, centerpieces, linens, all the things that go into bringing that wedding to life. So we want to make sure they fully understand this is what your budget's going to look like based on the guest count you want. And a lot of the time we're having to actually expand that budget. And we're like, okay, this is, if we go with this budget and this guest count, this is what your budget's going to look like. And it's going to fall short of your expectations. And so we have to let them know, okay, like, is photography important to you? If it is, okay, this is what your photography budget is actually going to look like. And we reallocate it and give them a new final budget. And then it's up to them to decide, okay, A, do we want to make room for that budget? Or B, do we want to scale back our guest list? And we let them kind of sit on that decision with their other decision-making parties, And then once we get the green light on the budget, that's when we dive into the planning process.
That's something we talk about all the time. People are like, well, I can cut back here. It's like, cut your guests back first. Yeah,
like mm-hmm. guest count affects everything.
It does.
And yeah. that's one thing I think brides go into it and they're like, but I really want 250, 300 people. And it's like, that doesn't make sense with your budget. You know, if you're working on such a tight budget, why the heck are you inviting every single person you've ever met in your life?
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you see to be easier? Do you see people expanding their budgets first or cutting their guests down first?
So typically they'll try and, okay, who can we cut on the guest list first? But
minimal
100%
cuts.
Of the time, the budget always expands. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, they're literally just throwing a number out there because mm-hmm. they don't know. They look at websites like The Knot, which is way off. And mm-hmm. they look at websites like Wedding Wire. That's way off. And then they come to us. And we just educate them. And I feel like when you educate them and help them understand, they're able to process, okay, this is why it costs more, and they can make sense of it. And then they can make room for it.
Because we obviously look at it on the photography side. Like, you spend all this money on everything else, and you don't have pictures to save that moment. Like, you've just wasted. That's how we look at it. Yeah. And I feel like it's important because, like, you spend all this money on flowers. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, those people get to see it that day, but that's it. If you don't have the right pictures or, you know, even video, I mean, if you're going to spend the money on everything else, that's not where to cut it. Yeah. You obviously don't want to cut the food cost because you want to have a nice meal for the people you're bringing in.
Yeah. I mean, it's really like you can't really start cutting things back like that because then it's like, what's the point? What's right. the point in spending all this money on all the things and then not have anything to show for it later.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, and then also like when they're like, oh, well, we want a videographer, but we're going to make it like a cheap videographer. I'm like, well, then you might as well buy a camera, put it on a tripod and stick it out there. Yep. That's basically the quality of the video you're going to get. Like, so don't skimp on it. But like, I mean, obviously there's ways like if they're set on the budget and they're set on a guest count, okay, choose a non-peak season. There are some vendors that have non-peak season pricing, not doing a Saturday.
So do you help a lot with the date picking at that point, or do most people come with you with a date in mind?
Most people come to us with a general season in mind. Like they know they want to get married in April, or they know they want to get married in October.
But then it comes down to availability of like venue and
Yeah. And honestly, like candidly, when people come to us, we're very upfront at the very beginning on kind of this is what we need to be able to curate the vision you see on our profile on our website. Mm-hmm. And I really vet them before we even book. So like if I start talking to them in the inquiry process and their vision and their budget and everything isn't aligning and they seem pretty kind of set on what they're wanting to do and they're not willing to be open necessarily to the education portion of it and like being willing to mold to really what they want, I tell them we're not a good fit and I recommend them to other people. Like I don't even take them on because that's just not a battle I want to go down.
Right.
We're going to be in this process for a long time. I want to make sure we're going to get along.
Totally. Yeah.
So how far is that? How far out do people typically book you? And then also how far would you prefer to be booked
out? Well, I guess you could break that down to pre-COVID and now COVID, because I feel like COVID has completely just changed the industry as far as like, I mean, from a photo standpoint, I get inquiries now for like 3 months out, 6 months out. And it's like that a year ago would have never happened. I mean, it would like be random and be like super small weddings, but it was extremely random. Now it's like a thing where these people, I'm guessing because they don't know what is going to happen with COVID. So they're like, we might as well just plan something quick and fast and get married, you know, versus like postponing, planning this huge wedding, all the things. So I guess pre-COVID and then now COVID.
So pre-COVID, it was really like 12 to 14 months was like a good number. Mm-hmm. Now we've had people book us 3 months out.
There you go.
Okay. we've had people booking us now like 3 months out. I mean, we had a client that actually had a Hindu ceremony that was supposed to take place in October, and they decided, you know, early in the summer that they were going to not do that wedding. They were going to postpone it. And then it was about 3 weeks before they were like, okay, actually we're going to do an intimate ceremony. And we like had to plan a whole event in 3 weeks.
Wow.
So, yeah, COVID has definitely made everything change. And we mm-hmm. have learned that we are very good at planning events in a very small
yeah.
time period. But I mean, pre-COVID, that would have never been possible because all the vendors in a peak month would be booked, mm-hmm. you know, year, month in advance. It was a very fluke instant that all the vendors that we thought would be a perfect match for this client just also happened to be available on that date. And mm-hmm. I think it's only because of a COVID world that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you think, so have you seen it start to change, like kind of fade out of this like COVID apocalypse
yeah.
kind of industry
yeah.
to now? Because I know we're starting to book out further and further out. Are you seeing that same trend on your end?
Oh, yeah. No, we already have like 3 weddings for April of next year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, people, I think, are starting to get more confident. And I also feel like in Texas, we've kind of been like on our own little bubble to begin with. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like people now that the vaccine has rolled out and everything, that they are feeling more confident and comfortable thinking about the long-term future versus like taking it month by month.
Yeah.
Yeah. And are you seeing more, how are the weddings themselves like changing now that, because I feel like a lot of people are scaling back, but still wanting to do something creative. And I feel like your business, you kind of pride yourself on doing unique, bold, colorful, just like thinking more outside of the box.
Yep.
So like, how have you seen your weddings changing from like pre-COVID, where I feel like it was more like just the traditional type of wedding where, you know, bigger guest count, pretty much, you know what I mean? Standard wedding versus like people scaling back, doing more intimate events, but still going all out on the florals or, you know, just unique installations, things like that.
Yeah. So I think like the biggest thing we've seen change is obviously the food style. Mm-hmm. People are much more aware of how their food is being served and presented to them. Like before, I feel like buffet was pretty common. Family style was really acceptable. And now I see people are being more conscious about actually doing plated. Mm-hmm. But then in terms of like the entertainment aspect of it, like they're obviously being more conscious on the dance floor, you know, how is the dance floor experience going to be impacted? So, that's kind of like the biggest thing that I've seen. It's really,
but are you seeing that on the planning side or like during the actual event? I kind of see people, COVID's kind of not here. I'm going to pretend it's not here. Like
yeah.
getting
yeah.
down on this dance floor.
On the planning side, I mean, really, they're wondering, like, they're straight up asking, okay, what are the restrictions? What are the policies? They're being more mindful of how many people can sit at a table. You know, if we mm-hmm. have a 72-inch round that can sit 10 people, can we sit 10 people there? Yeah. Or does it have to be 8? They're wondering, oh, the biggest thing is also like the elderly guests. Like they're really concerned about their grandparents. They want their grandparents there, mm-hmm. but they don't want their grandparents to get sick. So we're planning tables that are further away, less flow of traffic, so they can be there to kind of see everything happen, but they're kind of in their own little bubble far away.
Yeah.
We've had a couple weddings where they've done kind of like colored wristbands to designate people that are high risk, people that are, you know, wanting to be sociable, but maybe want to be respectful of the distance. And then people that are kind of in a non-risk group, and people pick the wristband that they want.
The don't give a damn people.
Yeah, that's pretty much. And so then the DJ will make an announcement, you know, be mindful of the people with the red wristbands. They are high risk and that's kind of what they've been doing.
That's so interesting. I've yet to see that.
Really?
But that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a couple ways actually that they've been doing it. So
I think that's
it's interesting.
You're scared, stay home.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I kind of, I feel like that's more what we've seen is like people that are afraid of the virus. They just don't go.
Like we've had people that they'll book the cottages and they'll keep, you know, their grandparents or whatever will stay in the cottage mm-hmm. and live stream
the ceremony
part and all that. Yeah.
There's been a lot of live streaming.
Oh, yeah. I bet live stream companies have gone way up since all this started. I mean, at least in popularity.
Oh,
because
yeah,
it used to not.
Sure.
It used to be like a just an additional like luxury thing. Now like almost it's very common to see weddings doing live streaming now.
Yeah, that was like our Hindu ceremony. You know, they only had like 20 guests, and that included a couple of the vendors. But they live streamed the whole event because they had family in India and France mm-hmm. and all over the country that wanted to see everything. But obviously for safety reasons, like couldn't even A, travel here, and B, just wanted to stay home from the safety, you know, yeah. where they could yeah. watch everything, but not be there.
Right.
But live streaming has been a big one. And we've also seen, like, normally we would tell guests, okay, you can plan for 80%. Like if everyone's pretty local, you can plan for 80% of your guests to attend. And of those that RSVP, yes, you can probably anticipate 80% of those actually arriving the day of the wedding. Mm-hmm. But now with like COVID, we've seen people like they'll get, you know, 80% of the RSVP rate, but then the day of the wedding, it's a drastic decline in actually who's showing up. Yeah. Or we have people calling the venue saying, what are you doing for safety precautions? Mm-hmm. And it's like, what are you doing for your own health?
I feel like that's exactly. got to be the answer. Like, yeah. take care of yourself.
Yeah. Right, right.
If yeah. you're scared, don't do it.
Yep. No, for sure. I feel like everyone needs to take responsibility for themselves no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, you can't make unhealthy life choices and then blame someone else for right. your health.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
I'm fine. Like, if you're scared, that's fine. Like, that is cool. Like,
yeah.
that's your decision, but it's not my problem to deal with your fear.
Yep.
Is how I look at it.
Yeah. Like, and I don't want to set myself on fire to save someone else.
Right.
Kind of thing. Like, I don't want to set my business on fire. I don't want to set myself on fire. Like, right. I am focused on myself, my business. Mm-hmm. If I can help you, great. But you're in charge of yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you don't feel safe or comfortable, then no one's forcing you to do anything.
Exactly.
And no one's holding a gun to your head saying you have to go to this wedding, you right. know?
Right. Okay. So you've kind of, for our kind of walkthrough, you've set us on our budget. You've set us on our number of people. What's the next step? Are you going towards the venue at that point?
So next thing after that, we actually want to get an understanding of their vibe and their style. And so we actually don't dive into the design process until about closer 6 months before the wedding. But to help us to get an understanding about them and their style, we actually have like a Pinterest activity we have them do. So we usually have the couple exclusive of each other create a Pinterest board. And we usually want it to have 6 to 12 images, ideally non-wedding related.
How often are the guys participating in their Pinterest board?
Oh my gosh, they're actually doing it. And they really like it. They
and,
do.
And how much of what they pin are you actually using?
Yeah, that's because I know
if for some reason I were to happen to participate in something like that, there would be a 0% chance of anything I wanted.
Courtney Incorporated.
Being incorporated into that. Okay.
So I actually have a really good example for this. So they pin the images and we tell them ideally not wedding related because I don't want to look at this. My goal is not to replicate an image they saw in someone else's wedding. My goal is to figure out them, their personality, their style, and infuse that into a wedding. And so I tell them if they want to have 1 to 2 wedding images, that's okay, but ideally not. We want it to be interior, travel, fonts, landscape, just whatever pulls at their heartstrings, we want on that. And then once they have those images pinned, we ask them to do 3 adjectives for each image. Because I may look at an image and see colors, and right. they may be looking at it for the textures.
Yeah.
So by doing the adjectives, it helps me see what they're seeing in that image. And a lot of the time, they don't even notice they're pinning like repetitive colors or repetitive mm-hmm. textures or anything like that. Like there was one client, they didn't know a color that they wanted at all. And then when we looked at their pins, they both had,
obvious.
Yeah, like they both had blues. And I'm like, mm-hmm. well, duh, we're going to do blue in your wedding.
I love that.
Do you happen to off the top of your head know like the Emily and Travis, how they're, because she did their wedding, right?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Do you happen to know what they were
pinning? Yeah, that'd be a good
example. Yeah. Well, so hers, I mean, she had a lot of textures, which is why like with their wedding, like the chargers, we did like the rattan beaded mm-hmm. chargers. We did that iridescent linen that had a little bit of texture to it. A lot of the dried foliage that was in there.
Yes.
A lot of it had to do with texture and a lot of it had like boho.
On both
but
sides.
They're kind of like a cheat type client because they knew exactly like what their style was, you know?
Oh yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
That's not the case for everybody.
No, it's not. And so like there was another couple we had where like everything she pinned was very like clean and crisp and white. Mm. And everything he pinned was very warm wood tones, amber. And like, she was like, I really like the clean look mm-hmm. of white. And he was like, white makes me feel like an insane asylum. and so like, so when we dove into their boards, I noticed that she did have a lot of white, but there was a lot of like really cool textures in it. And so to help bring some of the warm tones that he was drawn towards, like we picked like this gold textured linen, brought in some wood tabletops. And so we like infused both of their personalities into the design. So she got this white, clean, pretty wedding, but he didn't feel like he was walking into a padded room.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that exercise. I think that's a great like starting point for couples. And I love that you ask them to seek inspiration outside of weddings, because I think that's a huge deal. I personally, like when I'm creating my own editorial shoots, that's what I do. Mm-hmm. Because when you just follow weddings and follow weddings constantly, it just gets so repetitive, you know, like you can't keep creating unique content by only looking in your industry, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, so and I feel like, I feel like if you tell people to kind of like look at wedding inspiration, they're going to plan a wedding that is reflective of the world that they're immersed in. Like they're going to find stuff that they're used to, the food they're used to, the bands they're used to. Mm-hmm. So by asking them to kind of think outside of that realm, like we can help them see weddings through our lens and make it bigger and better than what they expected. And I also feel like interior design and fashion trends are so far ahead and the wedding world does feed off those trends. And so if you can incorporate those into your board, they're going to naturally be incorporating trends that might already be ahead and not even realize it. So that's why we do the Pinterest activity.
Love that.
Yeah. Okay. So now you've got our people pretty much nailed down. You've got our budget pretty much down. You kind of know the look that you're going for. Is this like a rough idea of the look that they're going for?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So this will help us come up kind of with a rough color palette and a vibe, like a feeling that they want people to have. So whether it's kind of like a Southern wedding, whether they want boho, industrial, are they wanting to lean more towards a moody vibe? Are they wanting to go more towards a light and airy vibe? So this really helps me kind of see their overall aesthetic. And from there, I now know the number of guests, I know their budget, I know their style. And now I could say, okay, these venues are a good fit for you.
So venues next.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So that's like the foundation. You gotta think you're not going to buy all your kitchen appliances before your house is ever built. It may not fit. It may not make sense.
Right.
So we want to start with the foundation. We want to get the venue, because that also tells us what does the venue provide and what do we need to outsource? Because that'll affect our budget too. We're constantly shifting the budget. So we send that budget to them. They approve it. We initial it. And that's our bare bones that we start with. And then as we start booking the vendors, if something comes under, okay, do we want to reallocate it? Do you want to make it a save? If they end up finding a vendor that they want to splurge on, okay, are we going to, you know, rob Peter to pay Paul, or are we going to mark it as a splurge item?
Yeah.
And increase the budget again. So we really kind of piece it together, but the venue is definitely number one. And then from there, we kind of want to take on what's important to them. Is food, is photography, is bar. And then obviously the one a day vendor. So like a photographer can only do one wedding a day. So we want to make sure we get those vendors secured. Whereas like catering, they can do multiple weddings a day. So we kind of piece it together, A, based on their priorities, and then two, you know, how exclusive are those vendors and how quickly do we need to get them retained?
Okay. So that's your ideal, right? Mm-hmm. That you get a clean slate. So let's say somebody comes in and they booked photography, florist, you know, one of those higher budget ones. And then you're going back to the venue at that point, or you give them like, hey, here's a couple venues that'll work. Or do you guide them to a venue, or do you guide them to a group of venues? How does that work?
So typically we want to guide them to maybe one or two venues.
Arrowhead I find Hill.
That dude, seriously, love you so much. But no, so whenever they come to us, most people who are full planning clients, they don't want a ton of options. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like, here's what we have. Minimize those. They don't want to go down the Google rabbit hole. They don't want to be poring over a bunch of things. And if we do give them, you know, 2 to 3 options, they want to know which one do you think is the best pick. And so we'll always say, okay, here's our 3 choices. This is the one we think is the best fit for you, but we wanted you to consider these 2 also. And then 9 times out of 10, they'll go with the first option. Mm. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So you, at the design point, that's when you start narrowing it down. So you've got, you know, 10 photographers, 10 venues. Do you have a certain list that you typically work with because you know how they work, how they operate? So how big are your, how deep is your roster for, you know, your different vendors or venues?
And I guess part of that comes down to style of the client too, because you're already at the style point by that part of the process.
Yep. So again, depends on style. Floral is such a tough one because there's so many talented florists.
Yes.
So that one, we have a pretty long list for florists, but again, once we narrow down their style.
What's
that,
long though? 10?
Like more than 10?
Like 12.
Okay.
Like 12 florists.
And that's really across the variety of different styles.
And again, that's between like Houston and Austin and College Station. Because like we're based in College Station, but we're like perfectly between Houston, Austin, and Dallas. Mm-hmm. And I mean, but we have Houston clients that will hire a florist we recommend out of Tyler. Mm-hmm. So like we let them know, okay, this is the closest vendor to you, but we feel like this vendor is a really good option. And there are vendors that, even though they aren't in the exact Metroplex, they like working with us. So they kind of waive or reduce a travel fee and help us out with the client. So, but with photography, oh man, that is one I'm very picky on. My list is not very long on that one. Catering, my list is not very, like I have three caterers I really like working with. I have two DJs that I like working with.
DJs. So are those caterers kind of like they do more than one style of food? Mm-hmm. So it's not like you have an Italian caterer, a Mexican caterer, and a barbecue caterer. It's, they can do more than one thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, and a lot of the caterers, they're like chefs. So they're good at creating like custom menus. Obviously, if they have a certain style of food that they want, I'll know that a certain chef kind of has a heavier, better experience with that kind of cuisine. Mm-hmm. So we'll obviously recommend that one. But yeah, with catering, we only have a handful that we really like working with. And DJs, that list is very small.
Yeah. It's very small. Well, DJs are a tough one because they've got to be able to lead a crowd. And like, I feel like the emceeing part of the DJ job is more important than actually playing the music.
Oh, well, see, I feel like, and from my standpoint, my biggest problem with DJs is actually getting them to work with me as a team. I feel like a lot of DJs
kind of like their own thing.
Yeah. They kind of like almost envision themselves as a coordinator, and they have a timeline and a way they like to do things. And if they're not used to working with a planner, we kind of like butt heads. And then on the day of, like, they'll do. So typically when people hire a planner, it's because the clients really don't want to interact with all the vendors. They want
a lot going on. Yeah.
Your inbox can get so inundated with emails from all the vendors. Mm-hmm. And so they want us to be the point of contact. And DJs, we find, are the one vendor that they just like don't want to abide by that. They're like, I don't know who you are. This is the client. I'm going to deal with the client. And I'm like, yeah, well, the client has hired us. And
that's interesting.
You know, like, you need to go through us. If we can't answer it, I'm happy to connect you with the client, but like, come to us first. Mm. And DJs are the one vendor that just, for whatever reason, don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And then on the day of, like, if they go around us and they're talking to the client, like, they'll, like, there was one wedding that DJ had found out that they wanted to do an anniversary dance on one other song, but like didn't tell us, and then did not want to share his timeline he had. Like, he was adamantly not wanting to share. It was the weirdest situation like we had ever been in. I'm like, we're all here together for this client. Like,
because that's a ripple down effect, because there's not just the DJ involved. I mean, there's
a photographer. Like, I've got a
there's so many other things.
It comes back. It comes down to communication.
Yes.
Like, truly, the best DJs are the ones that communicate across the board.
Yep. Yep.
I just can't stand listening to a DJ yell all the time.
Yeah.
That drives me crazy.
But at the same time, they've got to be able to like lead a party.
Oh yeah. Know? They have to be able to read the crowd. And if like, and there are some DJs where they are literally just a glorified playlist. And that drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Cause I'm like, no one's on the dance floor.
Yeah.
Like,
why
are but at the same time, there's also a DJ that's like a talk show host the whole time. And I'm like, dude, come on. Like, all you're doing is yelling, and it's loud.
No, there was this one DJ that I loved, and they moved to Colorado, and I was so sad. Like, we did a wedding with him, and I mean, he was like playing music and, you know, mixing everything, and people are on the dance floor and they're like pouring sweat. And then like the song would start to end and you could see that they were like, okay, yeah, like we're going to go sit down. And then he'd start bringing up another song and they'd all rush back to the dance floor. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh. But he just kept the dance floor going. And I was like, this is awesome. Like, mm-hmm. this is how a party should be. Yeah. And then there's other DJs where they're like playing this song all the way until the end. And if no one's on the dance floor, too damn bad. You're waiting until the next song, you know? And I'm just like, oh, this is painful. Really painful.
While we've had some pretty cool live bands that have come through.
I was just about to switch to that. So I was about to say, how many of your clients are prioritizing live band versus DJ? Because live band is significantly more expensive than a DJ. So how many of your clients are coming to you like, we really, really want a live band?
So I find that our older couples, and I use the word older lightly because like I'm in my 30s, but like I find our maybe early 30 couples tend to gravitate towards bands more, whereas like people in their late 20s are gravitating towards DJs more. But bands, I love bands. But then like I have a DJ who is so badass because he's a DJ, but then he has like an electric violinist and they'll like sync and play together. And that is just the coolest experience. So finding DJs, like if they don't have the budget for a band, finding a DJ like that, that can kind of bring in that live music element is a good in between. And like, there's another DJ in Dallas that we like working with. He sings beautifully. And so he'll like, in the middle of DJing, play the keyboard and sing songs. And
so just like way more interactive.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is awesome for weddings, because sometimes couples really prioritize, like they want that entertainment aspect, you know?
Oh yeah. Well, and we like, whenever we're planning our weddings, I remember when we first started, you know, like I went through the New York Institute of Art and Design and got my, you know, event planning degree or whatever, certificate. And obviously that's not a lot of like hands-on training. And so you go through and you're like, okay, this is how weddings are supposed to be. And I started realizing like when we were doing these weddings, you know, people were intentionally doing like the cake cutting and like bouquet and garter toss after dinner, like kind of to break up the reception. And as we started doing the weddings, I realized these grooms hate being interrupted in the middle of the dance party to go do a cake cutting and go do the bouquet garter toss. It was like once dinner was over, they wanted to party and they didn't want to be dragged away again. And so like we kind of revamped how we did our wedding process so we could get everything done. And then once the reception kicked off, it was like party time. And so finding DJs that could maintain, once the party started, the party was there. There was no like break was really, really important.
Yeah, that's true, because I think one thing with the band that is always like, to me, I'm just like, oh, I hate when they have to take their 15 minute breaks, know?
Yes.
But I understand it, but I'm like, man, it just like, everybody leaves the dance floor, you know? And they come right back when the band comes back. I'm pro live band personally.
Yep.
Like I think a live band, I tell him all the time, like, well, first of all, our wedding would look completely different if we were getting married now versus, versus nine years ago. But if we were still doing the whole wedding thing, which we've already said, like we would totally do a destination, very small. Anyways, but if we did a wedding again, I would for sure have a live band versus a DJ.
Same here. But well, in my
no offense to DJs, there's amazing DJs out there. Yes. I just personally think a live band is like, it's so much more like interactive and fun and keeps the party going.
Yeah, there's a band called Hot Sauce ATX out of Austin.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I love them so much. Like I did a wedding right before COVID, the world shut down. It was like the biggest wedding. But they had people, I kid you not, like I look at the pictures, we have like literally like 80-year-olds dancing on the floor with, you know, people in their early 20s. I mean, they had everyone.
And that's all about blending the music properly. And that goes back to your, you know, playing an entire song from start to finish versus, you know, you see something happening, you know, do your little wiki
turntables,
turn it into something else.
Wiki. Oh my gosh.
The hand movements.
I know. Yeah. If y'all could have seen the hand movements with that.
I'm classically trained in turning tables.
But, so. No, Hot Sauce, they are amazing. They did several weddings at Arrowhead.
Really?
In 2020. Yeah. And just phenomenal.
I love them so much.
Yeah.
I want to see some more badass violin players at weddings.
Oh my gosh. See, okay. That's what I was just telling her. Yes. Was Smither Productions. He was one that did Emily's. He actually has an electric violinist that he will tag team with.
Love.
Well, I showed you that Josh Vietti, I think is his name. I'm going to check.
Like, I think that's so cool. And I feel like a violin over a lot of instruments can really do some awesome stuff, especially when you get to the electric violins. Like, they are awesome.
Yeah. No, we had another wedding where it was really cool. They hired, I guess these professors that play music.
Have you heard of him? Josh Vietti. He's incredible. I've shot a wedding before where he was playing at, and it
send me his profile
was incredible. Instagram. I will. Sorry, I didn't mean to get you off
topic. No, you're good. No, it was cool because they hired these professors from A&M that are retired professors. I don't know. They on Thursdays at Fatburger will play, like, they have like their cello, you know, like all that stuff. And so she hired them to play for their ceremony in the cocktail hour. And I just feel like that was such a cool thing for the guests to experience. And then they had a completely different band come play for the reception.
Yeah.
But I think live music, especially during the cocktail hour and during dinner, is really, really fun and interactive for guests.
Yeah. I could see how like the hybrid action of, you know, starting out maybe with a live band and then, you know, as people start getting drunk and it starts, you know, just really unraveling, that the DJ or, you know, just a playlist, if it was done right or something, could
suffice.
Well, and I feel like when you
hit the mark, right?
When you hire a band, well, when we have our clients hire a band, we make sure they hire a really good sound engineer to kind of take over the gaps when the bands aren't there. Cause that's where like the sound engineer essentially steps in as the DJ. Instead of it just being a playlist, they come in and they step up the music in those lull periods. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing we try.
And what I've noticed is like that sound engineer person is the one walking around throughout the reception, making sure that like it sounds good everywhere. And like, I don't know how what they do. So
you just have one of those that you use typically, or?
Well, they're like usually part of the band, right?
No. Not always. So like we had Robert Ellis, the piano man. He was on the cover of Rolling Stones. He played at one of our weddings. They did not have a sound engineer. So we had to like piecemeal, because they had all their stuff on tour and they were coming down for the wedding. So we had to piece together sound equipment, the sound engineer, and the band.
Wow.
And just making sure that they're all a good match and they had everything they needed. So they don't always have a sound engineer. Like there is one sound engineer that I love out of Austin, and he has like a portfolio of bands that I'm like, hey, I have this client. This is the vibe and style. Like what bands do you have that work within that? And then he'll piece together the bands for us to like bring that for the wedding.
Yeah. I'm going to like totally switch gears here, cause I just had a thought. When you're planning a wedding with a client, how often do you run into an issue where it's like bride wants one thing, mom wants another? And then it's like this, this very fine line between like, how do I manage?
And it's still, who cares what the groom wants?
I mean, yeah. Unfortunately, I feel like the bride always has the final say, but I'm
in the wedding and marriage and life.
Pretty opinionated.
Oh,
I'm extremely opinionated. But that my opinions don't mean a damn around it. Look at this room. I wanted to put some stuff on them shelves over yonder, and she told me,
"Happy wife, happy life." Yeah. Oh yeah. No, but I'm curious to know, like, how does that typically play out? Because ultimately, it's like, does your bride sign your contract, or does?
Yeah.
You know, who's paying? Yep. You know?
No. That's so true. So actually part of the inquiry process is I ask them, you know, are there any tricky family dynamics? Mm-hmm. Like who's going to be making the decision process? And like, if they at that first encounter, like are like, oh, well, I want this, but mom wants that. And it seems to be like a really strong,
What if you don't know that in the beginning and then it becomes an issue?
Well, and like we have a client right now that the mom definitely has like a vision on some things. And so I'm helping
You're turning your head way too far. There you go. Right there. Right there.
I'm trying to look at this. I'm trying to look at y'all. I'm trying to cough.
I'll get you some like safety sticks.
I know. She needs blinders.
Like, I need boundaries.
Oh my gosh.
But but no, so the mom wants certain things. And so typically, I feel like sometimes we need like a counseling degree to be a wedding planner. But very much on our contract, like we obviously have to make them sign who's the client and who's the third party payee, because we have to know kind of who we're answering to.
Yeah.
But for the most part, like we haven't really, maybe we're really lucky.
Yeah.
Like, I would
say you're probably very lucky if you haven't run into that.
There you go.
Yeah. We haven't really had a big problem with that. And really it's just kind of educating and just figuring out like, what is it really important to mom? Like we had one mom where the most important thing to her was inviting a lot of her friends. Mm-hmm. The dad was important having a live band, and then the budget didn't match those demands. And so we had to sit down and say, okay, if you want to have this band, we need to increase your $3,000 budget to about $12,000 mm-hmm. for music. And if you're wanting to invite all your friends, that's totally fine. But again, the per person budget is going to have to go up. And they sat on it, they stewed on it, and they coughed up the money for it.
Yeah.
So what do you see? People come in and they think they're going to spend, you know, roughly how much per person would you say your typical client comes in at?
So typically a lot of our clients will come in
for like your, you know, your average bride comes in at what?
That's a little different, but
yeah,
really like after it's all said and done, our average bride right now is between $800 and $1,000 per person.
Is what they think they're going to spend initially.
No, initially what they think they're going to spend is like $250 to $450.
And then, and then the education
comes in. And then the education happens, and then it slowly creeps up. Because like I was doing the math on one of our clients, and I was like, oh my gosh. Like, and I didn't even know some of the pricing for like the wedding dress and stuff because we don't manage any of that. I was like, yeah, her budget started off as like this. Mm-hmm. And then ended, and it was like $858 per person.
And that was, and when you say that number, because some brides are probably listening, thinking, "Oh, that's so that's a huge number." Yeah. But that's you're talking thinking. Linens, chargers, florals, everything. Broken so down to
a per person rate. Yeah, the venue, everything.
Yeah.
If you were to take away the per person, what's your average wedding spend total?
So our average wedding spend is between $80,000 and $100,000 right now.
Okay. And that's how many people ish?
Typically we're looking between 100, 150. We usually don't do a lot of weddings over 150.
What do you think is the perfect wedding size for people to be able to maximize your money for your vendors, your venue? Like where do you find the most bang for your buck at what number of people?
That's hard to answer because like every person's different, you know, like some people really thrive off like the large party crowd and some people thrive off like a really intimate, like they just want to be there with their close friends and family. I find a lot of clients though battle with the fact that they want to please people and like mm-hmm. don't want, if they invite this cousin, they have to invite all mm-hmm. their other cousins, you know? I mean, personally, I find that like maybe between 100 and 125 seems to be like a really good sweet spot because you've got enough people there to have a really solid party, but it's not too many people that you're not able to really like connect with the people there. I find when you start getting over that, you're inviting people, but you're not having a chance to talk to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got married young and
we had 170, 175 people. And that felt really big.
I might have talked to 20 people.
Oh, but again, we were young. A lot of the guests were my parents' friends, his parents' friends, and I mean it maybe some of my college teammates, but we honestly like don't remember going around and talking to maybe half the people that were there. So that's why these days we're kind of like we're so pro, like do what you want to do, like do a smaller wedding, elope.
And I always tell people, I'm like, you are not going to remember half the stuff that goes on, mm-hmm. you know, alcohol involved not. Everything happens so fast. And like the timeline just, you know, take a minute to like soak it. Like you're doing a lot.
Yeah.
Take a minute to soak it in. Cause
And our wedding was beautiful, but it was pre-Pinterest. And you know how that goes. But it was beautiful. And it was a really pretty wedding. I just think, I tell my parents all the time, I'm like, you're so lucky I got married when I got married. Because if I was getting married now, like, oh my gosh.
Well, now,
the budget would have to go up like times three.
There wouldn't be a choice. If Senior had offered me that check now instead of to get married, like there would be, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
But we're also so involved in the wedding industry all the time between the venue, between the photography, that it's like, I wouldn't want to do all of that.
We were talking about that the other day, which is why you see so many people that are industry professionals. So like your wedding florists, your wedding photographers, videographers, planners, those people that have already been in the wedding industry for years, then they're getting married themselves. They typically will like elope or something crazy off, you know, do whatever, because they've already seen it all done. So it's like, what's the point in having this wedding now? Because, and not like what's the point of having the wedding, but what's the point in doing like the traditional route where we, you know, have the typical wedding with 150 guests and do the sit down dinner and all this. It's like people are doing way more creative stuff when they've seen it all done before, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I feel like I really try and encourage our clients to do creative stuff. And sometimes I think that's like the hardest thing with my mind and me being a planner is like, I have so many of these ideas and some of these clients are just very like, well, this is how we've seen it done.
Right.
And this is how we want to do it. And I'm like, but it's your wedding. And it's like, this could be so cool.
Yes. Getting like them out of their own
head. Going back to
the
Emily and Travis wedding, like I feel like theirs was different.
So fun.
Oh my gosh. They were so fun. Trusting.
They like, are freaking, dream.
That's
because
they're just so laid back.
Yeah, they're super chill.
Well, and it's funny because like I think about some of my conversations with Emily where like I was like, okay, I have this idea. I don't have a picture to show you, but like this is what I'm thinking. And she's like, and I'm like, okay, let me see if I can find some kind of picture, you know? And like I remember I showed her one picture and she was like, I was like, I promise it'll look better than this. Like, you've seen my work.
Well, she's pretty visual.
Yes.
She's pretty visual.
Yes.
So.
But she, I mean, like with the iridescent thing and the fringe, like just trusted us so well. And then I feel like it really came to life.
Yeah.
In such a beautiful way. I'm so in love with that wedding. And
me
can't
too.
Wait to share all the things.
Yeah. Same. And I think that so much of that comes down to brides just hiring vendors that they truly trust. I think that's like my number one thing whenever I'm even talking to like potential clients. And I'm like, book people that you trust and love and that get your vision, because that's like, they're the ones that are going to carry out the vision for you. So it's like, if you don't trust them, then there's no point in hiring them,
you know,
or like hire someone creative, not just like this cookie cutter person that, you know, does hundreds of weddings a year. Like,
yes. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah.
No, there was one, coordinator, like, so, you know, obviously when I started in the industry, we were doing coordination. And so in order to make coordination a sustainable job for a living, you have to book quantity.
Yes.
It's not about quality. You have to book a ton of weddings to make that sustainable. And then it's like, as I started doing that, I was like, this is not fun. I don't like doing this. And so, now we have definitely scaled back because I want to do more quality clients that I can vibe with and get excited with and enjoy this process with and not feel like I'm being torn a million different directions. Cause that is just so much more fun for me.
Yeah.
To be able to have that creative element.
You want to do work that you're proud of.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And exactly.
That's not going to be your basic, like just show up day of
coordination. That comes with some people want to be on the leading edge and some people want to just be, they want to do consistent quality. You know, I've mastered this skill. I'm good at what I do right here. And this is where I want to stay.
Yeah.
And then you've got people that want to push it. Like, I want to try something new. I want to see something new. And you know, there's clients for each of those. There's not.
That's true. Yeah. That's so true.
Yeah. And I feel like the wedding industry feels like there's a limited number of people getting married. And it's like,
oh my gosh,
there are so many people. There is no famine in
the wedding
industry. There are
millions of people getting married every year. Like
in Houston.
Yeah. I mean, literally, when you look at the average, like, I get wedding stats emailed to me, like, an average, like, this is the stats for this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, there are millions of people every year getting married. There is no shortage of clients.
How many people are doing their own thing that just didn't know?
Right.
You know, they're not going to be included in those stats because they didn't go out and hire.
Yeah.
And if they're like, well, there's the planner out there that doesn't just do the status quo because I don't want to do that. You know, once they see that those people are out there, you know, those numbers could even be bigger than they look on your, you know, your stats.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. But there's just so much to go around. Like, I think
it really is.
Yeah. When people, it kind of makes me cringe sometimes when I hear people always talk about like how competitive the industry is, which it is competitive, but not in a sense that there's not enough for everyone, you know,
right.
Like there's plenty of business to go around.
Well, I mean, if you're doing what everyone else is doing, then yeah,
then it's
competitive as well. Yeah. But if you are willing to
do like, different,
the difference between me and every other planning company is myself. Like I am the defining factor between Epoch and any other planning industry or planning company that's out there.
Yes.
Like, so I don't see other planners as my competition because they don't have me.
Right.
And I don't have them. Like, they're offering something completely different and unique to clients. And that's great. They're going to find a client that's great for them. And if a client doesn't book me, we just weren't meant to be. It is okay that someone doesn't want to book me.
Yeah.
It's okay that they want to book someone else. Like, I'm not going to lose sleep over it.
Right.
And that's where I feel like on the business side that the industry can be harder because the scalability of you is limited to the number of hours you can work.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Kind of like when we branched out and she started bringing on the associates, it's, well, we want Courtney. Well, Courtney can only book so many dates, you know? So we brought on, I mean, we've got a excellent team of associates, but they have their own individual look. But when they shoot for us, it's Courtney's look. They're shooting the way Courtney does. They're shooting, you know, the way our brand is.
Yeah.
We edit everything to match her look. And I feel like that's where people kind of miss like the scaling of a wedding industry businesses, like you were just saying, like they want you.
Right,
you can train somebody to do your thing, you know? And I feel like that's where the education part comes in, which is something she's been big on forever and we're trying to expand on, is like you can learn how to do a lot of different things. You can have your own style, but you can mimic a style too.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's important. So that's kind of where I wanted to push next was, for somebody wanting to get into planning, where would you tell them to start? Like, we have a bunch of people we know. And, and a lot of times we see brides. They're like, oh, I love the whole process.
I have several brides that I photographed their wedding in 2020, and now they're starting their own planning businesses. So I think they would be interested.
So you're laughing and making faces is because you hear it all the time.
I hear it all the time. So to me, that's like, that kind of drives me nuts because they're like, I planned my own wedding. It was so much fun. Now I want to be a wedding planner. And I'm like, yeah, that's not how it works.
So like, that, I guess to correlate those two, it's like somebody sees Courtney and they're like, oh, your camera takes great pictures. It's like, motherfucker, it's not the camera.
Yeah. Let me just set this on auto here and snap all, like, no, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
And if someone wants to be a wedding planner, the best thing you can do is find a wedding planner to shadow under. Like, I went through the channels to get a certification and it didn't really teach me shit.
So how do you go about finding somebody to shadow under? Like, what does that process look like? Like, so if somebody came to you and was like, hey, I want to shadow, you're like, yeah, come do it. Or
we literally have an internship program. And cause I am a complete open book. Again, like I said, I don't see people as my competitor. Like, you can come in and I will teach you everything. I'll show you all our softwares, all our workflows, all our processes. But that doesn't mean that person can turn around and successfully make a business.
Right.
There's just so much more that goes into it. And I feel like it really takes a certain personality type to have a successful business.
Yeah.
And not everyone's cut out for it. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and that goes especially for planning. Any business.
Yeah. So if someone wants to, like, when I wanted to get into wedding planning, so we had a backtrack. I originally started doing like styling for other planners. That's how I got into the industry.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Okay. And I didn't want to be a planner. But we had a wedding that we were hired to style. It was a private estate brunch wedding. We showed up to style it.
Who's and, we?
A former business partner of mine. Okay. So her and I showed up to style it. And so the weather was like awful, grisly awful. And it was a Sunday. So of course, most of like the wedding places are closed because mm-hmm. it's a Sunday. The coordinator they hired had no plan B. So we literally show up, everything is soaked, and they had a tent for the reception part, but they didn't have it for the ceremony part. So everything's soaked. We're like literally getting a leaf blower, blowing all the water off the chairs, getting towels. The wind is blowing so hard that like all the linens are literally flying off the tables. Hmm. And I'm like, do y'all have tent walls on standby? And the mom was like, no, should we? And I'm like, okay. Like, where did you get your tent? And she's like, oh, we got it from this company. I'm like, okay, they're closed on Sundays. The only tent company I know, because we were in like North Dallas, is actually in Fort Worth. Like, when's your coordinator going to be here? And they're like, oh, the coordinator will be here like 2 hours before the ceremony starts. So I'm like, okay, we're supposed to style this whole wedding. We can't do it until the linens stay, and the linens won't stay until we get tent walls. So I was literally driving to Fort Worth, picking up these tent walls that did not match this tent, zip tying it to this tent, getting ship anchors out of the grandpa's garage to anchor these walls down.
Oh my.
I mean, it was, and then the coordinator showed up, and the coordinator was like, how much longer until y'all are done?
Oh,
and
I was like, gosh.
And I'm like, I've got the uncles and the grandpa here helping me attach these walls. Like,
you're like, I'm literally doing your job right now.
I'm like, how about you help dry off these tables? And she goes, oh no, I wasn't paid to do this. And I like, so I am a Enneagram 7 wing 8.
Oh, here we go. Enneagram.
Here we go. I love the Enneagram.
If you know anything about an 8, they are very blunt and bossy. So that
you're looking at him. You're looking at him right here. So, he hates when I call him a number. He's like, you cannot buy. I'm like, you are exactly what I'm telling you. You
I don't
are.
Fit in a
Whether
box.
Whether you like it or not.
I don't fit in a box.
Listen to him.
But no, my bossy side came out real quick. And I was like, you were paid to get the ceremony started on time, right? And she's like, yes. And I just chunked a towel at her. And I was like, start drying off chairs and tables.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you were going to help us whether, like, I wasn't paid to do this either. But it's this bride's biggest day. So step the F up.
Yeah.
And so we literally, like, got everything done.
And when you say you're a stylist, this is like you're putting all the decor out?
We're putting all the decor out, making sure all the place settings are right, like just making sure everything looks pretty.
Okay.
So we get everything set. And I mean, I kid you not, the ceremony is releasing as we are like sneaking out of the back of the tent. And I mean, we were supposed to be gone hours before anyone ever arrived. And so we're like wearing yoga pants. Our hair is like all frizzy and a mess because of the wind and the rain. Mm-hmm. And people are all in their like nice brunch outfits. And like, we're like trying to sneak off to our truck. And the mom was like, thank you so much. Here's a check. Like, how much should I pay you for this?
Oh my
and,
a lot.
Yeah. A and, lot. And like in our mind, we're like, quite a bit. But we are like, no, like, don't worry about it. We wanted to do this.
Yeah.
And she's like, are you sure? Like, why don't y'all stay for brunch? And we're like, no.
You're like, we're in yoga pants, lady.
Like, I really just want to get out of here.
Yeah.
And so we like get up into the truck and like we sat down in the truck and we were like, what the fuck just happened? Like, what the fuck? And we were like, what if we would have had another wedding we had to style? Like, we would have had to been like, bye, you know, and like left that bride high and dry. Mm-hmm. And it was like literally in that moment, I was like, I can't leave this in anyone else's hands. Like, I have to be in control of everything because mm-hmm. I can't have that situation ever happen again. And it was in that moment that I was like, okay, what can I do to become a planner? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just a coordinator. Like, I wanted to be a planner. And so I went through the New York Institute of Art and Design. One of my friends she also had like a rental and styling business. And she used to be a wedding planner and didn't want to be a wedding planner anymore. And so she really helped kind of guide me on that. I shadowed some weddings under her. I shadowed some weddings under a few other wedding planners. And then when I moved from DFW to College Station, that's when I was like, okay, I'm not in the territory of the people that I know and love. I'm in a new territory, so I'll start my business. And I launched Epoch.
So just to be clear, shadowing is free.
Shadowing is free. Like I literally showed up essentially an internship. Like I'm gaining knowledge mm-hmm. and not being paid for it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what some people don't understand is when you're shadowing, you're going to work. You're going to do things.
Yeah. You're not just standing there. Like you're part of the day, but you're,
oh yeah,
you're gaining knowledge and experience, not necessarily money.
Yeah, no, I was lighting candles. I was doing escort mm-hmm. walls. I was making sure people were lined up for the ceremony. I went mm-hmm. to the rehearsal. I mean, I did everything. And if I wasn't the one doing it, I was like glued to her side, mm-hmm. you know, like watching what she mm-hmm. was doing, how she was handling things.
So shadowing, how much interaction were you having with people? Or did you limp? Because I see a lot of people shadow and they, you know, they want to have a conversation. They want to talk and whoever you're shadowing can be like, shut the fuck up. Like,
well, I think
I don't want you running your mouth about everything that's going on, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. I think it depends on who like the mentor is. I very much am kind of like observe and watch and ask questions when it makes sense. Mm-hmm. I'm not like chatting anyone's ear off about it. So I think it just depends. Like, obviously ask questions, but in a time that makes sense. Like after all of our events, like we have team meetings every Monday and every Thursday. The Monday is so we can recap what happened that weekend. And Thursday is so we can say, okay, this is what's going on this weekend. And so on Mondays, you know, how did the wedding go? Did anything go wrong? Is there something we could have done to make it better? You know, did you have any questions? And then Thursday going into it, it's, hey, okay, this is the wedding that's coming up. These are some tricky family dynamics. This might be some things you need to be aware of. And we like really prep our team, and our interns are part of all those meetings. Like they're part of everything.
And that's a great time to ask questions.
Yeah.
But in front of a client is not the time.
Oh, no. And I always tell our team, if you don't know the answer, if someone comes to ask you a question, you don't say, oh, I'm the intern. Like you just say, great question. Let me find Heather and I'll get back to you. Yeah. And then you come find me or Ashley or whoever the lead is.
And don't make something up.
Yeah. Don't make anything up. You never say, I don't know.
Right.
Like
right.
You always let them know you're going to find an answer and you're going to get back to them. Mm-hmm. And unless you are 100% confident or it's like in stone on the timeline, it's not your job to figure out that solution at mm-hmm. all. Unless they've done so many weddings. Like our process is you have to do 30 coordinations, like start to finish to be able to like be a lead. Mm. So until they've reached that point, you are not allowed to like be in charge of anything other than what I've told you to do, doing an escort, like escort table or something.
Cause mm-hmm. I know planning has got to be difficult, but at the same time, I feel like planners are the people I get most annoyed with.
Yeah.
I hope people don't
laugh.
Okay. So I hope, like, I really, really try not to be the annoying planner. And normally we have vendors tell us that we are different than all the planners they've worked with. I don't like being an Enneagram 7. I don't like micromanaging and I don't like being micromanaged.
Well, I guess
and I'm not going to do that to my
team. When I say
team.
Annoying, it's like, I feel like planners are the ones that'll come and be like, hey, help me with this. It's like, no, figure it out yourself.
Like, I'm like so nervous about what he's going to say right now.
I'm like, Wait.
But I guess the best way to kind of reference it is like your kids. If you're around your kids all the time, they will ask you to do everything.
Oh, mm-hmm. yeah, for sure.
If like we're at the venue, somebody's going to ask us to do something.
Because mm-hmm. they like, just see you standing there. Yeah.
You're the planner. You like do your thing.
Usually if I ask for help, it's like A, because I can't physically lift something.
Yeah.
Or B, I don't know the space and I'm like, please help me.
Yeah. But if it's like, hey, here's our layout. Here's the tables. Here's the chairs. Okay, cool. We got that done. Hey, you know, we actually decided to move this. It's like,
sorry.
Like that's your problem at this point. Like we've done what we needed to do.
Have I done that to you?
No.
All the time.
No. Yeah, it's really, that gets off on a whole different tangent.
And I'm not scared.
Going down that
road. I know you're not scared. It's hard because we see both sides of it with the venue. And
oh, I'm sure. No, yeah. There was one venue we showed up to. I was 8 months pregnant. I was obviously not planning to be pregnant when I booked this wedding, and I was. We show up to this wedding, and the venue owner was also the florist. Mm. And
that's a whole nother bag of problems. Oh my
gosh, y'all, this wedding was a nightmare. She comes up to my husband and myself and our other team member we had, and she goes, "I'm not done with florals, and my staff didn't show up, so I'm going to need you to set up the tables and chairs." And I was like, "Oh, excuse me."
Yeah, like, it's like that.
I am eight months pregnant,
waddling around. Like,
I am the planner. That drives me nuts.
Like, I've got other stuff I've got to do. Call your own damn husband and have him come move the damn tables. And like, why was this not taken care of 3 hours ago? Mm-hmm. And she called the groom.
Or the day before. Tables can be set up.
Oh, yeah. She called the groom and groomsmen to come from their golfing trip to try and. Like, the groom calls me. He's like, "Do I need to come set up tables and chairs?" I was like, "No, you do not. You stay put exactly where you are."
Yeah, like, this is your wedding day.
Yeah, like what? I'm like going back up to the venue owner. Like, excuse me.
Oh, my gosh.
You need to problem solve this.
This is your deal. Yeah, at this point, this is your problem. Yeah. If it changes, you know, I mean, that's such a stress. That's nuts.
So many things. I swear, when I retire one day, I will write an entire memoir of
like a book.
All the things that I have seen and experienced as a wedding planner, because God knows it's a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
I
so
I can only imagine.
You've shadowed. You've done your shadowing. What is your next step if you wanted to become a planner?
Yeah. So
are you ready to go at that point? Or
I mean, I guess it depends. So there was like one planner that I know, her internship, like literally only had people showing up the day of the wedding. She didn't reveal her back-end process or anything like that. So I think it's understanding, one, who you're interning, how much information they're willing to share. Because if they're only willing to share bits and pieces, okay, well, then you're going to be hodgepodging it all together. Mm-hmm. But like for us, I'll share everything. Anything you want to know, I'll share. I don't have a problem with it.
Because I imagine networking is huge.
Networking is so huge. And I feel like that's another thing. Like when you're interning, get to know the vendors that are coming and setting up and doing everything, because those vendors, when you do start your own business, are going to remember how you interacted with them during your internship. And then also being respectful of the person you're interning, because you may have interned with us, but if you turn around and then try and stab me in the back, all those vendors, guess who they've had the longest relationship with?
Yeah.
Me.
And they're and those vendors will come right back to you.
And they're going to ask. And so like, obviously don't burn a bridge when you do an internship. And then candidly, when you're going into the internship, I let our interns know, you're welcome after the internship. If you want to stay on as a contractor and try and get weddings under us and our brand, or you're welcome to go and start your own company. It's completely up to you. And like our interns, like Ashley, like she started the internship with us and has never left. Shawnee Dawn started her internship with us and never left. Allie, she started her internship with us. And the only reason she left is because she got a job in Washington. So typically the people who do intern with us, we don't take a ton, do end up staying with us. I try and take care of our team the best I can, but if people want an internship, just make sure, you know, how much information are they willing to share with you? What's their policy? Do they have a non-compete? What does that look like? And then,
which is always interesting in Texas, because
they don't really hold up. It's kind of more of like a scare tactic, but it's, and it's more of also just like a respect issue. Like, don't say, "Hey, I'm going to come learn all your like proprietary information, and then I'm going to start a business right next door to you." But I mean, again, that goes back to, there's more than enough business out there. Like, if they want to start their own business,
but the respect and burning bridges is huge.
Oh, for sure.
Or like undercutting you, like working for you and then taking a client and be like, "Hey, I'll do it for 50% less if you just come do it on my side."
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Oh, no.
I think that's more of the issue than the whole non-compete thing.
Yeah. And that's the whole point of the non-compete. It's not that you don't want somebody to work and make money. That's not the point of it. You just don't want them to
go out and then start undercutting you every single time.
Oh, yeah. No,
and nobody should want that for the industry, because at that point, then you're watering down the industry.
The whole market.
Yeah. No. And to me, that's a whole another rabbit hole, is like the whole pricing thing.
Oh, gosh.
Because
I feel that so hard with photographers.
How many coordinators
too.
Are like, "I'll do your wedding for $500. And I'm like, excuse me? Like,
what are you doing? Like, to yourself, to everybody else?
Yeah. What a fun hobby.
You know? And like, at the same time, like, you understand everybody starts somewhere. And I get that. Yeah. But like at the same time, those events you should be doing for like friends that you know, or like not just trying to steal clients from.
Sure.
But clients should also realize when somebody says we're going to do it for $500, you're going to get $500 worth of work.
Oh, like, yeah.
There's no
quality. Extra. And that's another thing. Yeah. Like, there are always going to be budget brides that need the $500 coordinators.
Yeah.
But in the long term, I think it's like less than 5% of like coordinators and wedding planners have been in the business for more than like a certain number of years. Mm-hmm. And it's because when you charge that little, you cannot sustain.
No,
you can't be profitable.
Which is
first
why
of all, you'll
such
get worked into the ground.
Oh yeah.
And second of all, that's not a business.
It's a hobby.
Yes.
It's shopping money.
Yes.
Is what it is.
Because I mean, for a wedding, how many phone calls and emails do you field for a particular wedding?
She's giving us a look.
Side eye.
I mean, like, it's got to be a ridiculous amount.
So the week of a wedding alone, our team can spend about 80 hours between emails and phone calls. I mean, it is insane.
And that's not the event.
And that's not the event itself. Yeah. Like, I mean, we are sending so many emails and this is with court. So with planning clients, it's different because with planning clients, like we've kind of pieced everything together. We know these vendors we're referring. We know their contracts. Mm-hmm. We know the number of hours they're allocated.
You're working hard up front so that it's minimal work on the
back end.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's always an issue.
But there's always something that comes up. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not a problem. I mean, it's everything's always solved. Like,
yeah.
There's
but
never
that's what you're getting
big.
Paid for is solve the problem. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But with coronation clients, like you got to think 30 days in, we're like, here's all our vendors we've booked. And now I've got to piece together how many hours. Oh, by the way, like your hair and makeup is going to be done after the ceremony starts. We've got to back this up and add on some artists and your photographer, you know, they're not going to be there till the exit. Like, is that okay with you? And so it's like a lot of.
And this is why you are no longer doing coordination. Yes.
Out completely.
Epoch is now full service only.
Yes, full service.
Because that's like for Courtney on the timeline deal, like the wedding coordinator starts pushing timelines, like you've now impacted the photography timeline. You've possibly impacted the food. You know, you start, it's a ripple effect and it just gets crazy.
And we try and be like a team player. Like I'm like, here's what we've come up with. Let me know if this works for you. And if it doesn't, we will change it. Like, I don't like being the end all be all. Again, I don't like micromanaging your job, but I don't want you micromanaging mine. Mm-hmm. So when I send you our timeline, if this doesn't work for you, come back and tell me so we can fix it.
So how many timelines are you working off of? Because I know there's, like Courtney makes one.
Well,
so you're making your overall timeline, but you're
a master.
Yeah,
you're putting everybody's timeline. How many timelines are involved?
Yeah. So we've got hair and makeup, photography, cinematography. We've got the entertainment, we've got the catering, we've got the venues. And then of course the setup windows with the florists and making sure that, you know, the flowers are there before the cake gets there, if the cake needs flowers, making sure that the linens are there before the florist gets there. So they have linens to put their flowers on.
And that's assuming you're at one location.
Yeah. Now, if you've got a ceremony at a different location, then you've got a whole different
transportation involved.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
There's a whole other set of logistics, especially if it's like at like a Catholic church. You have like 30 minutes.
A small window. Yes.
To get everything done. And then everything either A, like you're donating the flowers to the church and having to get your pictures and get the hell out of there. Maybe finishing your picture somewhere else before going to the reception venue. So, I mean, there's a lot of pieces.
Logistics.
And so we have a master. We do, when we send out our like master email, we're like, if you want a condensed timeline just for your tasks, let us know, because we can sift it down just to photography, just to cinematography, if they just want to see what their window looks like. But in that beginning email, we want everyone to see the whole master, because
how much, like, stuff is impacting us.
Yeah,
stuff.
Because like the florist can't know what her arrival time is if she doesn't see when the linens are going to be there. Yeah. And so they've all got to understand how their role plays with all the other vendors. So we send a master timeline to everyone so everyone can see what it looks like. And our email that we send with that is a novel. You've seen it. It is a novel.
But it's like, necessary.
It is.
Because that's like with her stuff, she's a natural light photographer typically. The sun doesn't wait. Like,
right.
Oh, exactly.
It's going down.
And my clients know that.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm usually like,
But when a timeline starts getting messed with and screwed up, people are late or something, like, the sun's going down. Like, it is going down.
And and pictures are so important to us. Yeah. I mean, what? Okay, we're the planners, we're the designers. But you don't have anything to show for it unless
you have great pictures.
Yeah. Exactly. So pictures are very important to us, and we want to make sure that those get taken care of. So if we've got to shuffle stuff around to make those pictures happen, I'm here for it.
Yes, 100%. Yes. As are most planners. Most good planners will do that as well.
But, I mean, you've also been through situations where it's like, okay, we're an hour behind. Like,
oh, I mean,
your hour's worth of pictures are now condensed to 15 minutes.
I can't tell you how many times, like, certain vendors have run over, and then photography is left to make up the time. And it's like, now you're expecting me to shoot something that I allotted an hour for in 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, I mean, I always make do. Because that's what we do. We're efficient and we get the job done. But at the same time, it's like, would have been nice to have my time to be creative and really get some, like, you
really
know.
Really cool shots. Cool, yeah.
But all that goes out the window when you're pressed for time and you only have 10 minutes to get, you know, entire wedding party plus bridesmaids plus groomsmen. Plus, you know, it's like you really have to hustle.
Yeah. We had one wedding where the hair and makeup was really running over. And I feel like that's like where the timeline
always
gets messed up. And it drives me nuts because you'll talk with like the office person and the emails and the timeline. And then whoever shows up the day of the wedding, like they didn't communicate what this timeline was supposed to be. And we had this one wedding where the pictures were like super important to the bride. It was starting to run over. I'm like, I went into the bridal suite. I was like, hi, yeah, we need to have hair and makeup done in 30 minutes. Like, what is the status? And she was like, well, I have this and I have that. And I'm like, no. I need a time. When will you be done? Mm-hmm. And she was like, we can be done in an hour. And I'm like, okay. So then I'm like going to the photographer. I'm like, okay, let's shift all this around. We're going to move this stuff. You know, maybe we can do this after. And we're like literally penciling in a new timeline to make everything work. Mm-hmm. But
is there any downtime for a planner on a wedding day? No.
She's laughable.
At no point it slows down for you. There's always something.
Once the dance party kicks off. So typically on like a wedding day, what it looks like is we're doing everything all day long. Everyone goes to have dinner. We want to make sure our photographer, cinematographer, all of them get fed.
I was about to say, I don't even see planners eat.
Yeah, no.
I don't even see y'all eat.
I tell my team once all the guests and everything have gotten food and all the vendors have gotten food, that's when I tell my team, you are allowed to go get food. Mm. They will usually have a plate made for me and then they go keep it off somewhere. And then typically Ashley's like, Heather, you need to go eat.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm so like, sweet. Okay, you know, and then she takes over and I'll go eat.
Yeah.
But it's usually after the dancing has kicked off and I know we don't have anything else coming up. I just want to make sure a face is always there. That way if the bride or someone needs something, they're not like, where's the planner?
Yeah.
You know.
But and you're also responsible for the exit going on time.
Oh, yeah.
Like if there's fireworks or a sparkler. I mean, so there's still stuff that you're responsible for.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we're constantly communicating.
They don't stop. They don't stop until teardown is done.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. We're constantly moving around and communicating with everyone. So, I mean, I'll get a moment to like sit and eat. And then we'll sit and hang out and watch the dance party. And that's always really fun to like, because at this point, everyone's like drinking and just, it's hilarious.
Yeah, it gets
so
silly.
We're watching all that fun happen. And then we're just waiting for the next moment before we're like, okay, time to cue everyone up again.
Because I think it's important for people to see like there is, like if you want to be a planner, it's not, you know, because they see you bits and pieces out of the day.
Pictures.
You know?
Yeah. No, so the biggest thing we've seen with people coming on as interns is they see the pretty. We had one intern come.
They see the Instagram part.
Yeah, they see the Instagram part. And they see that we're at a party. And we had an intern come and she was like, she wanted to be part of everything. She did a wedding. And after that wedding, she emailed us. She was like, this is a lot more work than I thought it was. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, that's fine. That's the great thing about an internship. You didn't invest in a website and all these things and realize you actually don't want to be a planner. Mm-hmm. And we had another intern that would come and she would literally disappear at a table and be sitting on her phone. And we'd be like, where is she? And she would just be at a guest table sitting on her phone. I'm like, you can't do that as a planner. Like you are not a guest. So you're not sitting at that table and you're not on your phone. Like, no. It's a lot of work. Is it pretty? Yes. But I think you really have to love what you do.
But is it only pretty? No.
No.
It's not only pretty.
No, it's not. You have to be great at problem solving. You have to be great at communicating. You have to be great at time management.
I think you have to be great at problem solving on your own.
Yeah.
Like you've got to be able to find creative solutions.
Yeah, like thinking quickly too on your feet.
Finding. And you can't lose your shit.
Yeah.
When exactly. stuff happens.
Like, not letting your expression show maybe what you feel actually on the inside.
Because you're dealing with, you know, a bride, which the wedding is probably one of the more stressful days.
It's emotional. Every part of it is emotional.
The mother-in-law of the bride. I mean, all people, the people that are putting a lot of money into a single day, and it's extremely stressful, and you've got to be, you know, they're calm kind of, because I'm sure people bounce shit off you all the time. Mm-hmm. And are rude, maybe not intentionally, but it's a high stress.
Oh, yeah.
You as fun as the day is, it's like, extremely high stress.
No, and I think that's one thing where I thrive in this industry. So my dad was a drill instructor and you know, a police officer. So he would sometimes have trouble turning off his, you know, sergeant mentality coming home. And so I grew up having very thick skin. I don't get offended very easily.
Coming home like, with that round brown on.
So, like, and when people give feedback, like, even if I hear someone critiquing someone else, even if it's not directly to me, I'll wonder, okay, how can I apply that to myself? And so I feel like when you're in that industry and you're in that moment on the wedding day, tensions are high, emotions are high. You can't take things personally. People are going to say stuff and they may just be stressed. They're not like necessarily upset with you. It's just like, this is what's going on and we need it solved right now.
Making a big deal out of an issue that's not a huge deal.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you just have to be able, okay, like take all that information, take all those emotions, soak it in and like figure out how to disseminate it in a very calm way is like super important for a wedding day.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, you'll even get vendors, like we'll get vendors that come in and are just like so upset that they're having to do a certain thing. And I'm like, okay, I don't know why this is my problem, but let me help you figure this out, you know, and cause you can't, you want good juju between the wedding vendors on the good day. You want good juju between the family and the wedding party and the couple. So, I mean, there's a lot of emotions and tensions that you have to make sure stay diffused and calm and happy on the wedding day.
Yeah. So if I'm trying to be a planner, I've done my intern, I've seen a wedding, I understand the work that goes into it. What am I investing in for my own personal business at that point to move forward? What would you say the most important starter steps would be?
Well, obviously you want to have a website and you want to have a legit email, not an @gmail.com. Like you want to have, you know, your domain email. Yes. And then networking. To me, I've never been a paper person. I'm very digital. So like, I don't have business cards because I'm the kind of person, I'm like, I'm going to take a picture of your business card, but really I'm going to go find you on Instagram. Mm-hmm. So I don't think investing in stuff like that is important. But then networking, like finding vendors that you want to align yourself with, and building your portfolio. So doing styled shoots, finding ways to get images and content that you can put out there to attract the clients that you want to bring into your business. And then going and meeting people. I know when we started, we went and we would visit some of the venues we wanted to work at. And we were like, look, like we will gift a coronation package to a bride. Like, so whether you want to do it a giveaway or have it being a booking enticement, whatever it is, like we would love to gift a coronation. And that was a good way for us to get in the door with some of the venues we wanted to work with.
Yeah.
But yeah, just getting creative and networking is really like vendor referrals are some of our biggest gold in terms of client referrals.
Yeah.
So you brought up an interesting point for the website. And so let's say you've had a bride, she air quotes helped you design the wedding, right? How do you feel about her using images from her wedding on her website? Not saying that she did everything, but you know, it kind of alludes to that fact.
That's a no-no. Yeah, no, if you did not 100% design a wedding, like if there was a planner or a designer, you don't take that work and credit it as your own. It's like with a second shooter, like a second shooter shouldn't take the content they shot from the business they got with you to promote their photography business. Like, I just feel like that's stepping on toes. If you had a hand in designing your wedding, great. Like you might use it in your portfolio when you meet with a client one-on-one. Like this was my wedding, this is what we did, but advertising it on your website or on your social media.
So first thing you'd recommend is doing a styled shoot for yourself.
Hands down, where you are literally the one doing creating all the work. Because with a styled shoot, you're having to come up with the design. You're having to piece together the vendors. You're having to come up with a timeline for the day. It's very much like a wedding day without all the people and on a much shorter timeline. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that would be the most appropriate way to get your design. And hell, if you loved your wedding and you designed your wedding, do a styled shoot around it, change mm-hmm. it up a little bit. And then it really, like, that will be your baby and you can advertise it. But I don't feel like it's appropriate to use your own wedding for marketing.
So you feel like starting before even going the website route, you need to have either content. A, go work a wedding for a friend or something, or do your own styled shoot.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And usually there are friends and family. Now I am, I think it's a little tricky getting mixed in with family and friends and weddings. Cause again, tensions are high. And sometimes if you're getting involved with family and friends, like they feel like they can probably treat you a little differently. Like, what's the right word to say?
Bulldoze you.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They're going to be less filtered than what they probably would be if it was an actual professional that they didn't have an emotional relationship with. So that's always like really, really tricky. But
it can help with your, you know, problem solving, and because you're going to see situations that you wouldn't see in a typical professional situation, I'd imagine.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So your recommendation to people is don't become a wedding photographer. I mean,
not a photographer, a planner.
No, I think, dude, if you want to become a wedding planner, do it.
Would you go coordinator that pushes into a planner?
Or would you go straight for planning? I don't think I would go straight into, like, if you have zero experience in the wedding industry, I don't think it would be wise, unless you've done extensive interning, to dive into planning, because that's a whole beast of its own. Like, you really have to have a good understanding of workflows and systems and processes to be a wedding planner. Like, you are literally guiding this client, and until you, I think you understand and get the foundation of what a wedding management is, you're really risking jumping into the planning part of it.
And like, how many systems are you working with? I'm curious.
Like softwares?
Yeah. So, because that's an investment as well.
Yes. Yes. So Aisle Planner is what we use for our planning clients.
Okay.
Just because it's super comprehensive.
And is that a subscription, like monthly, or is that a yearly monthly. Annual thing?
I don't know if they do yearly, but I know they do monthly. And I mean, when we started only doing coordination, we did use Aisle Planner and we gave our clients access to it. But I learned really quickly that giving so much information to our coordination clients opened us up into a rabbit hole of we were being paid for coordination, but almost being expected to be their planner. So we shut that down real quick.
Yeah.
And we moved to a different program called Basecamp. And so Basecamp, I like Basecamp a lot. Honestly, if like it had some sort of budget feature, I would only use Basecamp. One, because it's mobile app friendly. And a lot of our clients really like that.
Having that, yeah.
Yeah, having that feature where Aisle Planner is not.
Where they can sit on the couch and go through everything.
Yeah, yeah. It's got like the checklist features, and you can control what parts of it the client can see and what part we can see. So we use a lot. Basecamp we 100% use for our team. It's where we put our team tasks. We have different boards on there. Like we have a blog project. We have our core crew. We have different projects for everything on there. But each of our coordination clients now have their own project in Basecamp. And so they have their checklist, but we condensed their checklist to the final 30 days. They don't get a full planning checklist because they can easily go get that from The Knot or Wedding Wire or Pinterest or whatever. We just give them the final 30 days, things that we consistently see that they're forgetting and they need to have on their radar sooner than later.
So is Aisle Planner for budgeting, or what is Aisle Planner?
Aisle Planner is for our planning clients. So that has a comprehensive checklist, like start to finish. Typically for our planning clients, like that's where we house the budget. We do the initial budget breakdown. It's where it tracks all their payments that are coming up. Like it has a snapshot saying like this month you have these payments coming up. This week you have these payments coming up. It's where we put all our vendors. So all the vendors we were recommend to them, they're all in there. You know, they're like gray if they're recommended. They turn gold when they're booked.
Okay.
We can upload all their documents. We can make notes about the contracts. Anything we put in there will come to our clients in an email format, which is really nice because then they can respond directly to it mm-hmm. without having to get on Aisle Planner, and then it pops into Aisle Planner. So it just like keeps everything continuous in there for us. And then one thing I really love about it, because we love seating charts, mm-hmm. Is it's got a seating chart aspect in there. So when people are doing their guest lists and tracking their RSVPs, they can pull up the seating plan that we have in there, and they literally can drag and drop the people to tables. If it's a check mark by their name, they're not having to wonder, did they forget anyone? If people drop out or people last minute change, it's super easy to go in there. We usually tell our clients, like, once all your RSVPs are in, grab your favorite bottle of wine, cocktail, make an evening of it. And it's super easy to do the seating chart in there for. Cool. So that's really one of my favorite features in there. But Basecamp is...
So Aisle Planner, Basecamp, what else?
We use HoneyBook for
contracts and
contracts and payments.
How many contracts do you have? Because I know
right
contracts
now?
Seem to get missed when people are starting a business, and COVID showed a lot of people how important contracts are.
Legit contracts.
Oh my gosh. Yes. So we technically, I mean, we have our main contract. And it breaks down, you know, if you're coordination clients, like these are the terms. If you're a full planning client, these were the terms. Obviously, moving into 2022, you know, the coordination part won't be in there. We have a contract amendment. So if people are changing a date, we have a contract amendment. Like if they knew they were going from this date to this date, if they didn't know what date they were moving into, we had a whole another contract for that. Those are really like the three primary contracts.
So that's a pretty significant investment to have mm-hmm. all that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we paid a lawyer to draft our contracts for us because, and I'm so glad we did, because when COVID hit, I could easily be like, okay, this is what our contract says. And God, we watched so many people, you know, refunding, and that was just mm-hmm. really hard to see vendors we knew and loved, like, really suffering financially.
And some disappear.
Some of our clients were like, hey, our catering is no longer in business, you know? And I'm like, okay, well,
which is so sad.
That was just like a whole nother beast mm-hmm. on that part. Yeah. I think the biggest mistake I think I made when COVID hit was I didn't realize HoneyBook, the way we had populated everything, is a lot of our full planning clients, like, that, you know, they put a big chunk of the retainer down and then they have payments along the way and then they have their final balance due mm-hmm. is I didn't realize that when I moved their date, it automatically moved all their payments, even though our contract said mm-hmm. their payment schedule would stay the same, except that last payment would move. The system automatically bumped all the payments. And I was like, I can't go back to these clients and be like,
actually, your payment's due now.
Versus... I was like, well, we're just gonna, you know, good thing we've saved. We're just gonna eat this and learn for the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like legal is a website. Is obviously extremely important.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And legal. These days, a website, like, it's gotta be a good website. I mean, that's how people are essentially shopping around, mm-hmm. you know, like so much of
that. And Instagram.
Yeah.
Well, Instagram, I feel like there's a lot of shopping on Instagram.
SEO. Like, I mean, there's a lot that goes into a website. It's not just, hey, here's a pretty website. There's a lot of back end stuff.
Did you pay somebody for your website?
Heck no, I did it all myself.
You did it all yourself.
With Squarespace. Like, yeah. And honestly, I feel like I'm not an idiot when it comes. There are some people that just like the tech side of stuff, I think, is really just daunting. Mm-hmm. But with Wix and Squarespace, I feel like they really kind of walk you through that process.
Squarespace is excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Squarespace. I did hire a copywriter that helped kind of.
Because that's,
like,
hard.
Copywriting is hard.
Yeah.
I did the same for my website. I outsourced that because I was like, I'm not even going to pretend like I know how to write a good website. Like,
yeah. Yeah. No, no, no.
And also, like, realizing, you know, that your time is valuable. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, where it could take me a month to copyright my own website, whereas it could take someone a week. It's like, I'm just going to pay someone to do that, where I can focus on what I'm actually good at and then outsource what I'm not good at.
And our website, you know? Girl is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was nice because, like, she wrote, like, obviously she gave us a big thing we had to fill out to help her come up with the copyright. But then she was like, okay, and this is where you place your buttons, you know, to mm-hmm. like guide people through your website. She really helped kind of come up with all of that for us, which was really nice.
And truly, like, there's strategy behind a website. There's a reason why things are placed at a certain point in your website. There's a reason why there's call to actions. Yep. There's a reason. Yep. There's a reason for everything, literally.
For sure.
So who did you use, just in case somebody's looking?
So Courtney Lee Photography, we used Cream Brands. Catherine, she's amazing. Highly recommend. She's in like the wedding niche market.
And then who did you use wedding for professionals. Your copywriting?
I used The Writing Well, and her last name is Zuckerberg, not related to Facebook.
Oh, I was
Zuckerberg.
Like, what?
Not related to it. But no, I love, so me, I'm very like catty. Not catty, that's like the worst word I could have used. That's why I'm not a copywriter.
I was like, wow, I never heard somebody describe themselves.
No, but like I like joking and like being sarcastic and stuff. Okay. And I felt like she really embraced that kind of, like, if you read her and my emails back and forth to each other, they're hilarious. And I felt like she really understood that side of my personality. So that's why I clicked with her and like latched onto her.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. So website, a couple different softwares, the legal stuff. And at that point,
and then branding. I mean, you've got to have
branding. A solid branding. Is huge. Branding is huge.
I mean, picking your colors and your font and the style, like that alone will attract people to you.
But even that, there's so much that goes into that. I mean, that when I rebranded and then also when I redid my website, which is one of the reasons why I loved Catherine with Cream Brands, is that she forced me to like go so deep into my brand that honestly, it was like questions I was asking myself that I've never asked myself before, which I think is huge. It's more than just pretty colors and a pretty logo.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's so much more
than
that.
There is. And like, so we just hired Shira Savada to do a brand audit for us. And she sent me like an email of questions. And I'm like going through these questions and I'm like, oh, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. Like, I haven't thought about that. Like, what's your brand voice and what's your brand message? Yep. And I'm like, Googling, what is a brand voice? Mm-hmm. You know,
which is crazy. Because
tell me what my brand voice is. What is it saying to you?
Truly, though, like it's so different from when I started my business almost 8 years ago or 8 years ago now, where I did just get pretty colors and a logo. Mm-hmm. And I had no, like there was none of this like talk of like your brand message and your brand voice and, you know, what is like, what do you bring to the table? And it's just, it's so much deeper than when I started. And so like a rebrand was totally necessary for us, but yeah, it's just interesting to see how far branding has come.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And maybe it's always been that intense and I wasn't in a place to notice it. Right. Cause Matthew tells me all the time, he's like, that's always been like that. You've just never really paid that much attention to it. And so maybe I was at a point in my brand and my business where I was like, it's time to like pay attention to these things.
Well, yeah. And so that's the thing. Like, since we're phasing out of coordination and we're trying to go into more of like this quote unquote luxury wedding planning full service, I was like, does my brand align with the clients we're trying to attract? Because, and I think that's another thing, like with being a wedding planner, like I get so attached to our clients and the work that we create for those clients that sometimes it's hard to like, okay, does this really align with my brand? Like, yeah, it may have been a badass wedding and I loved it, but does it align with my brand?
So true.
I mean, and that can go down to like the simplest detail of who the photographer you use because their style has got to match the style that you're trying to portray.
Yeah. Well, and that's one thing that I think is really hard, like for me as a planner, because I love colorful weddings. I love bold. I love eclectic. And so we tend to attract both, you know, moody boho filter and light and airy. And so that's one thing that like Shira Savada is helping us with is she was like, I'm going to go through the photographers that you're working with and say, okay, this one's doing you justice and this one's not doing you justice. And she's going to weed through the vendors that we're like recommending. So we can also hone down, okay, these are the ones that are in line with our brand and these are the ones that are not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we may be going through a rebrand. I don't know. We'll find out at the end of March, you know, what we need to do. But I'm really anxious to see how that goes. But getting a brand and
but I always like to see people investing in their company.
Like
you're spending money on somebody else to look at you and kind of make sure that your company is traveling in the direction you want to go.
Yep.
And investing in yourself, I think, is key to growth.
Oh, yeah. And you're always going to be learning and growing. Like, if I would have just stopped at the New York Institute of Art and Design and been like, okay, I'm educated, I'm good. Mm-hmm. Like I would be so stagnant. Like I have had to continue to invest in mentors. And as I've invested in those mentors, I've grown and I've learned and I've outgrown those mentors and invested in a new one. And I mean, I'm on my third mentor now. Mm-hmm. But I think as you're in the business, you constantly have to be growing and evolving and investing yourself to be able to keep going to that next level.
And recognizing that, like, you're a professional, you've done this, you're making good money, you have your own business, you can still have somebody mentor you, teach you new things. Yeah,
no, you are never going to be the end-all be-all. And honestly, like, why reinvent the wheel? I am not the first wedding planner there ever was. What? I am not, you know, like...
You're not the first?
You know, right? Like, there's no point in me going and making these mistakes that I know other people have made from and are willing to share with me. I just have to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And I am more than happy to pay for it. So I don't have to waste valuable time and money making those mistakes.
Totally. And that's something I feel like when people come to me and they're like, you know, about starting my business. And I'm like, man, not everyone when they're starting out has the money to invest in themselves and invest in mentoring. And I get that. I was one of those people. Me too. I didn't have the money to do that. So I didn't. So here I am 8 years later. I've got 7 years of failures to, to teach me to get to where I am.
But she also had me in her ear like, oh, we can do it ourselves.
Yeah.
I'm huge on doing it yourself. Now I'm like, damn, why the fuck were we doing it
but
ourselves?
But if I could have paid someone who was 7 years ahead of me, and could have jump started my business and been even 4 years ahead of where I was when I started, it would have been huge for me. So I'm a huge advocate for, you know, do mentoring, do, you know, pay someone who you admire, you love their work, you potentially want to be on their level someday.
Yep.
And think about it as an
and
investment.
Mentor with them.
Not just I'm paying somebody. I'm investing in myself.
Yes. And I think also, like, when you're looking for a mentor, like, don't look for someone that's like 15 years ahead of you, because that's way too far.
That is a long time.
Like, find someone that's 3 to 5 years ahead of you, like, and where you want to be, talk to them. And when you get to that point, another 3 to 5 years. And that's what we've done. Mm-hmm. And I was really, really lucky that my husband had a great job, had great finances, and he, like, gave me money. He was like, I'm going to invest in you and your business because I believe you can do it. And he helped me jumpstart my business. And then every few months we have a goal meeting, like, what is our 1 week goal, 6 week, 3 month, 6 month, 9 month, 12 month. And we constantly reevaluate our goals together on, okay, personally, business, travel, like, what do our goals look like? And he super is, cause going back to the thing you love, my number 7, I am always like new and shiny, kind of like, you know, squirrel mind. Like, I'm constantly bouncing around. And so having him be like, okay, this is your goal, this is what we're aiming for, this is what we need to focus on, like, has really helped.
You need that, like, bring you back down to reality kind
of. Yeah. Cause I'm like spontaneous.
Sevens are like in the clouds.
Yeah. We're the dreamers. So, he's a 5. He's very
hates when I get on this Enneagram talk. He truly hates it.
Side eye, I guess.
But it's so true.
Trying to bring me down.
It's so true, though.
If you learn your Enneagram, though, like, you can really become a better person.
It's kind of depressing, honestly, though. I think I got a little depressed when I figured out what number I was.
What are you?
I'm a 9, wing 1.
Really?
It's very, very accurate. But I think I figured out things about myself that I was like, wow, that's why I am the way I am. And I had no idea up until I was like 27.
Oh yeah.
You know? And it's like, when you're now, I'm like, gosh, I really, that's me. That's why I am and why I do the things that I do.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I feel like it opened up a whole nother world and I got a little bit like in my own head about it. I was like, man, I have to work through some of this trauma that I have in my life. Well,
that's like the 7 wing 8s. Like, 7s are known for not, like, not wanting to, like, we're always moving and busy because we don't, if we sit down, like, deep, heavy emotions can start to sink in and we don't want to feel those emotions. So that's why
you don't like feeling pain. Yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Quit looking at me like we're in this. We're not in,
you get it.
We're He's not in this boat together.
And what's funny is you're a 7 wing 8. Matthew is an 8 wing 7.
Oh.
So
you're more bossy.
Oh, 1,000%. He is
The only thing I know about this is what she tells me, and then she does the Instagram. She's like, look, this is what you are today.
Well, you know how they have like Enneagram Instagram posts? Oh, yeah. I share them with him all the time. And I'm like, this is you. This is you. You're an eight. And then we're total opposite. Total opposite. But it works out. I mean, it's funny because I admire the things about him. I wish I could be more like his personality sometimes. Because I'm more of like the keep everything bottled up. I hate confrontation, hate conflict. And then I also have my wing one, which is like total perfectionism, which makes sense with my job. I'm like,
you know, photos.
I want everything to look perfect and be perfect all the time, which is not real life.
Which makes our argument at home so fun. Because I'm like, let's go.
Let's hash it out right now. Like, what's wrong with you? What are you mad about? Talk to me about it.
Let's fight it out.
My husband's a five, so they're like the recluse.
Yes.
They very much internalize. They like knowledge.
And I'm
so,
more
which
about
is
that.
Why when you were like saying you like podcasts and music, I was wondering if you were a five because that's my husband. And yeah,
whenever, I thought for a long time he was a five.
I'm like constantly pulling stuff out of him. I'm like, what are you upset about? Like, just get it out and like let's get it over with and be done.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't have feelings. I'm like, you do have feelings.
Yes.
I can see it in your face.
Yes.
I want to fight and scream and yell and cuss. And
that's
then,
your eight coming out.
And then I'm totally. Ready. I'm ready. I'm done. After that, we're good to go.
Yeah, me. And that's where when my eight comes out, if someone pisses me off, I'm like, okay, let's hash this out and be over with it. Like, and move on. And
I
can.
So admire the heck out of that. I wish I could be like that. I try. It does. Like you were saying, knowing your Enneagram truly, you can like, honestly become a better version of yourself because you know what your issues are at that point and then you can work on them. Like I feel like I've come a long way.
Oh my gosh.
And then he says I don't have it. You got issues, boy. You don't
that
don't
is your
know
issue
it.
That you don't think no. you have issues.
He's like, I have no issues. I am a perfect human being.
But I will. Like if I can't have that argument and get it all out, it's like, all right, we're done. I don't need to deal with you anymore.
He can like cut ties.
And that's the biggest thing with Enneagrams is your people like cutting ties and like not turning to someone for 20 years. Like that is,
I've done it.
That is an eight I to don't, a T.
1000%. Yeah. That's
like,
that's
I've got like friends. I'm like, man, I don't remember what I was mad about, but I know I can't.
You deserved
talk to
it.
He's like, I know I can't go back now because I've cut anymore. Ties with you. I'm like, gosh, that's a whole nother issue in itself. See,
it's not
you
an issue.
You do have things
it's
to
not
work
an
through.
Issue. I don't have any issues with it.
Anyways, Enneagram could be a whole nother episode in itself.
It could.
Okay, so your website is
important.
No,
so if you're looking for Epoch, go to Google and type important. Apparently it's search result number one. Non-paid
your website is .. important.
Even going back to like if you want to be a wedding planner,
you need to have a website. No, okay.
Where can people find your
website?
Where
can we find you?
Okay. People can find us. It's www.epochcoevents. So Epoch is EPOCHCO events with an S.com.
Company. Epoch Company.
Collective.
Collective.
Mm-hmm. Epoch okay. Collective. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
And we got Instagram? Big goals for in the future.
I love that.
What are they?
I can't tell you.
You can't share?
Uh-uh.
Selfish.
Uh-uh. She's like, uh-uh.
Can you hint to it?
Are you like wanting to grow?
Grow. Okay. We'll have sister companies eventually.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Because you do, something you do to look forward to. Reynolds.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that won't be the sister company.
She's like, that is not it.
So over. No, we do rentals purely for our planning and design clients, like because we have lounges and farm tables and stuff. So we'll gift those to our planning clients to like elevate their design.
You don't charge for this?
Uh-uh.
Okay.
No. I mean, if they go over a certain amount, yes, we do charge for it. But for the most part, you know, we let them know, okay, this is what you're like gifted balance is and this is what you can get within it and they'll stay within it.
Everybody likes free and weddings.
Oh yeah. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. So and it I mean hell, it makes our weddings look better. It That's adds true. To our portfolio. So it's a win-win.
Yeah.
So totally. I don't mind it.
Cool. So
epochcoevents.com and your Instagram is
@epochcoevents.
Same thing.
Love it. Yeah. Keep it simple.
Yeah.
Keep it simple, stupid. Yep. Got
Kiss.
It.
Cool.
really appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Had a great time.
This was fun. I so enjoy chatting with y'all.
Yeah. It's a great conversation.
Go check out your Enneagram.
Yeah.
Hard pass on the Enneagram.
Oh my gosh.